Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Well, we're looking at the issue tonight of leading a youth ministry. And Dave, thank you for your time to speak to us. I gather you have quite an interesting story. You went to Germany following your family at the age of 18, mm-hmm. and then did some Bible study and theological training after that. And then when the Berlin Wall came down, and in the post-communist era, you were really gripped by the need for the churches to engage with youth ministry. And that's what led you to set up the Josiah Venture, mm-hmm. Initially working in Poland and the Czech Republic, with two other couples, and then we're now a couple of decades on from that, and you have a movement that's involving a dozen countries mm-hmm. in Eastern and Central Europe and 200 staff, half of whom are nationals. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly exciting, and I think people could learn a lot from your experience and the testimony and the things that the Lord has taught you. So I wonder if you could start by telling us what the vision and purpose of the Josiah Venture was when you set it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you would have told me when I was a teenager that I would still be working with young people today, I've worked with young people for 36 years, I wouldn't have believed you. That actually wasn't my direction. But as a 16 and 17 year old, a couple things happened to me. One was someone began to disciple and invest in my life, and I began to share my faith and see my friends come to Christ. And I saw two things. One is the openness of young people and the unique opportunity those young years give for evangelism. They say 90% of those who trust Christ do so before they're 21. Yeah. So if you're thinking of a region of the world like Central and Eastern Europe, where we focus with a very small percentage of believers, youth ministry just is the thing that makes sense. And the other was I saw how quickly I was formed and shaped as a leader when I was young. I didn't have to unlearn things. I was idealistic. I was ready to go. Someone pointed me in a direction and said, go, and I said, okay. And young people are the most quickly shaped to become disciple makers in those years. And so after my experience, I felt like I want to pass that on to others, and I started, and I'm still doing it. And some people stay in youth ministry maybe because they feel like they can't do anything else, or because they like the fun. I'm still in youth ministry primarily because of the strategic calling I have to make disciples and see a movement happen. Yeah. And one of the things I found as I studied the life of Christ was actually probably most of Christ's disciples were teenagers when he called them. When you think of the fact that they most of them were unmarried, when you think of the fact that John, who was part of that initial collection of five that were all peers, Matthew wasn't quite a peer, but that he was still alive in about 90 AD when they think he wrote Revelation. So he was probably 18 or 19 years old when Jesus started his ministry. And So I really believe that Jesus launched a youth movement. He didn't reach into the upper echelons of society, but he picked the young, idealistic, unshaped people and led them to faith in him, and then equipped them to make disciples and make disciples.
So walking in those footsteps, right. You know, beautifully described, how did you put the vision and purpose of Josiah Venture into practice when you were starting out?
Yeah. Well, I was working in Germany with youth at the time the Berlin Wall came down. We began doing short-term trips into Central and Eastern Europe, and my question was, where are the youth ministries? And most of the churches said this was illegal under communism. We really don't know how to work with young people. And so for a long time, I tried to convince all my friends to go, and then realized that was on God's heart that we go. But one of the things that when my wife and I and one of the couple moved into the Czech Republic, the other couple moved into Poland in 1993, which wasn't long after the revolution, things were not much different that short. There was freedom, but the changes, it was still very much an upheaval. And one of the things that helped me was some of my initial training in the life of Christ, which is what we try to focus our training on now. And just asking the question, what would Jesus do if he was here? And it's interesting that in the first stage of Christ's ministry, he actually didn't start with lots of miracles and he didn't start with crowds. He started with a few and he built deeply into them so that when the ministry expanded, it expanded with a team. So the first thing we did was worked on learning the language and got involved in a single local church and said, how can we get this church full of young people? And it was a small church of about 60. And I just started asking the question, where are the young people in the city? And they're in school. So I volunteered to teach in the local school, began to share my faith.
This is in Poland.
Czech Republic.
Czech Republic.
Yeah, Northern Czech. And then just kind of out of the blue, summer was coming, and I asked some of our students, what are you doing? They said, we're not doing anything. We used to go to these camps under communism, and they're not being offered anymore. And so they said, you know, if you did an English camp, our parents, our non-Christian parents, won't send us to something religious unless there's some reason. But if you teach us English there, they'd even let you talk about God, because I was talking about God with everyone. And so my students actually told me that. So we, with about 3 or 4 weeks' notice, we put together an English camp in summer of 1994, and our little youth group of five went to 60, and in just about 2 months. And then we started asking the question, okay, what are other ways that we can share the gospel in innovative ways in this setting? And so it's been exciting to see that. That first English camp, by the way, we did 3 the next year, 7 the next year. Never expected that would be a fruitful method of outreach, but we've done over 1,200 week-long camps in the last 21 years. We've had 65,000 young people at our camps. So it started with just this, you know, my students wanted me to do something for them in the summer. And half of those young people are non-Christians. So we've had over 33,000 young people, non-Christians at camp. And the thing that's exciting to me is that an average of 10% of them are saved in a church a year later after that experience. Okay. So, and I think that's one of the things that keeps me in youth ministry is I continue to see the white harvest that's there.
Well, they say 95% of the time in youth ministry, they make you feel younger.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's the other thing is keeps you young.
Yeah.
That's right.
So how have you seen the work develop over the 25 years? It's now quite a mature ministry from those small beginnings.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I see in the life of Christ is that the whole make disciples who make disciples, and things have kind of a natural organic flow to them. So there are people on our staff right now who were in that first youth group that I led. So one of my closest coworkers today, he trusted Christ when he was, I taught him English when he was 16. He trusted Christ when he was 17 or 18. He went to work for GE in the United States and then came back and is one of my closest partners. So part of it is as you invest in people, then actually leadership grows, and you a disciple-making ministry grows its own leadership. So that's been fun to see people trust Christ and then move on and get a vision for reaching into other places. So we're actually in 13 countries now and have we have 310 on our staff today, mm-hmm. And we're praying that we can put teams in another 11 countries that we're focused on. One of the unique things too about Josiah Venture is that we're very church, local church oriented. We say we're not a parachurch organization, but a pro-church organization. So our desire is to train and equip the local church to reach young people. Yes. So we're working with about 400 churches across the region, helping them. We want to see them full of young
And you're people. Putting people back into churches mm-hmm. when they're
all,
they trust
all of our, we never will run a local youth ministry that's not under a local church.
Yeah. And is it still focused pretty much around the camps English teaching, or are you using different methodology?
Yeah, we've got several different methodologies. Basically, our outcome is a disciple-making youth ministry in a local church that's reaching the lost, training believers, and equipping leaders. And has its home in that local church. That's our outcome. And then we do different things to try to produce that outcome. One is we train leaders and we try to teach them how to make disciples and how to really serve in their local churches and reach the lost. And then we come alongside with some really innovative methods of evangelism that we can put in their hands. And one of those is English camps. But we've identified 5 main highways of evangelism for young people. And we're trying to work on all those. So one of them is language. The second is music. Third is schools. The fourth is sports. And the fifth is media. And if you just think about young people and think about the world they live in, that's their world. They're in a world of media, social media, and all kinds of media. They spend lots of time in school. They love music, or they love sports, or they love both. And in a European environment, they really need to be bilingual to get along in the world. So English continues to be an interesting way to reach them.
Yes, and everyone wants to learn English of the opportunities it gives them, I guess. So, yeah. So tell us why, I mean, it's perhaps obvious, but why is youth ministry such a crucial part of the Lord's Great Commission?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mentioned that I think that's how Jesus worked. But it's interesting that in churches, what you'll see is it's almost like the youth ministry leaves growth rings in the church. And if you go into a church and go there, there are a lot of people in their mid-30s here. You probably can look back 10 or 15 years and find that there was a real strong youth ministry at that time. It really is a place that quickly infuses the church with new energy and new blood, and then kind of gives that gift to the church that resources the future. In the same way, if you see a large crop of leaders in their 40s, who are prominent Christian leaders and really breaking trail, you usually can go back and find something happening when they were all in their 20s. Yeah. That was innovative, forward thinking, that was really challenging them to be disciple makers and captured the hearts of those young leaders, shaped them, and they're just living that out today. And so part of it is, I think youth ministry is kind of a predictor of the future of the church. Whatever's happening there will soon be happening in the rest of the church. Sometimes what happens is a strong generation comes up, and then they just care for their generation, and they don't reach back down again. And you'll look behind them, and you'll find that they've just lost the next generation. And then that generation kind of just gets older together, and the church is hollowed out. I think the church needs to be constantly renewing with an influx of that new energy and blood.
Now, you were saying that when the Berlin Wall came down initially and you looked at the harvest field, you were heartbroken because of the lack of youth ministry in Central Europe and Eastern Europe. And so can you talk us through what are some of the things, you've talked about what promotes youth ministry, but what are some of the things that hinder youth ministry and stop it growing that we should be alerted to in our churches?
You know, as we talk to our youth leaders, there are a couple of themes that come over and over again. One of them is the young leaders of today's generation are really looking to be mentored and built into by someone older. And often the older leadership in the church is too busy running church to really look over their shoulder and say, come on, I'm gonna build and invest in you. Or they see the young people only as cheap labor. You know, we need to assign you this and this and this job, and oh, now I don't have to worry about it because
they're not being developed.
But they aren't being developed. People, so yeah. Over and over again, we hear this cry like, why is no one really pouring into me or believing in me or cheering me on? They just kind of go off their radar. And I think the second is that young people create a certain mess. It's like having babies. You know, a house stays clean, and then you get babies, and there's stinky diapers, and things break, and you have to move all the fragile items up a notch, and the carpet gets stained. But you do it because the new life is worth it. And sometimes churches are too committed to preserving the cleanliness of the church. They don't like the mess of young people and the mess of their new ideas and the mistakes they make and the extremes they go to and the fact that some of them fall away and all of that. And they don't give that kind of freedom for a new expression.
And so what happens to a church when it doesn't prioritize youth ministry in this way?
Yeah. Well, what happens is two things happen. One is that they lose the young people, and the same thing that makes young people quickly reachable also makes them quickly lost. They're mobile. They're quick to respond, and they're quick to leave. Older people will just stay around out of loyalty and out of tradition and out of habit. Young people will find the door and head out. And they're so much harder. They're so much harder to get back later, after they have 5 or 10 years. I'm thinking now of ones who've grown up in the church. So one of the things that often happens is they even lose the young people they have. They're just gone. They don't have a peer group. They get swallowed by the world, and then they don't bring in a new generation. And the other thing is there's no challenge to keep them fresh. So just like it's my oldest son just had a son, and his wife have been married 2 years, and their marriage is so much stronger because of their child. Now it brings lots of stress. It brings lots of problems. But it's healthy for them to get their eyes off of themselves and care for someone who's young. And the same thing, it's healthy for a church to care for young people. They'll just be healthier if you put that picture out, the view out. And what we find is that churches that don't prioritize that and don't give energy to that end up being kind of anemic and often just stabilizing in where they're at. It's vital for the health of the church.
Do you think young people in Central and Eastern Europe are more open to the gospel than older adults?
Yeah, I think they are. And here's one of the interesting things, though.
Why do you think that is?
I think some of that's just the nature of youth. They're just more open to everything. Mm-hmm. But we're also finding, I feel like in the last 5 years, we're entering a time of harvest in Central and Eastern Europe. And we're finding adults being quite open to the gospel too. The difference is adults take so much longer to respond. And so there's an openness, but there's that caution, that slow moving. We have this conversation, we need to have another one. Well, I'm busy for the next 3 weeks. And so everything just slows way down. With young people, you compress that. It just moves so much quicker. You get the growth quicker, you get the change quicker, all of that. But actually, I think adults in Central and Eastern Europe are pretty open too. We're seeing incredible harvest in our camps last summer. 24% of the non-Christian students made a profession of faith. So 1 in 4. So just think about, you have a room full of non-Christians and 1 out of every 4 of them is making a profession of faith. And many others go from atheism to somethingism. Like, I think maybe God exists. I'm not ready to put my faith in Jesus. So it's not like the other three didn't move spiritually. So we probably find 1 responds, 2 move, and 1 stays the same or moves backwards. But we're probably seeing 3 of the 4 actually move spiritually during that week of camp. That's astounding.
Yeah. I guess younger people are into different things culturally. Mm-hmm. And they have a different set of priorities than older ones, not being married or with children and still training. How do their different sets of priorities create opportunities for ministry?
Well, a couple things about young people that sometimes adults don't remember. One of them is they're highly relational. Adults have their spouse and their kids and a set of relationships. Young people are pushing off from the gravitational pull of their nuclear family, and they want another family. And so you cannot do youth. You can't depend on program to run youth ministry. You can't depend on events. You can't depend on content. If you don't build a relational context, youth ministry is always highly relational. And because of that, it's also demanding because you can't mass produce it. The only way we do 110 camps, but we do them with, we have to mobilize almost 1,000 people, 1,000 workers to do those 110 camps. So
that's each year.
Each year.
You're doing.
Yeah. So because they work because of all of the personal care that's in that camp, you can't, that's why it works. It works because of all those relationships. So in youth ministry, you can never outrun your relational fuel. So the only way you get it going faster, you have to pour in more relational fuel because that's just young people. They just like
it. So relationships are absolutely key to
absolutely essential. Just cannot do it without.
Looking back, so that's the central thing. But looking back over your 25 years in youth ministry, what would you say to people just starting out in this work? Mm-hmm. What are the principles that you've learned that a strong youth ministry should be built on?
Well, first of all, you have to build those relationships. And part of it is some people don't prioritize enough time for youth ministry. So what they think is I'm going to run an event, and my time is planning the event and being at the event and running it.
Okay.
And if you do that, you'll never have a good youth ministry. So the event is a place where the relationships are expressed. But good youth leaders always prioritize time outside any event or anything for just the raw building of relationships. So one of the things I did is I taught at the school. Another time I went every Monday and just ate lunch at the school. We'd have kids over at our home. I'd put them in the car with me. I'm driving somewhere. You have to build that relational basis. And then the other thing is that young people, they also want to be engaged. And so it's better to, it can't be passive. It has to be active. And you have to even do things with them. So some of the evangelistic tools that we're doing right now that are working really well are, one of them is youth rock gospel choirs, and we teach people how to play instruments and sing music and do concerts and act and all those things. And in the process of all that, we're teaching them the Bible. But that engagement, the fact that I'm not just, I'm just not just sitting and watching, I'm not just a spectator. They want to do. They're at that age that they want to do. And so if you don't put something in their hands to do, if it's just come and watch a performance, they'll be out the back door. Same, we use sports. Those different highways are part of what they're designed to is engage the young person actively. So if I was saying, how does someone start? Well, one thing is I'd say study the life of Jesus. And actually, that's how Jesus started. He started, we talk about purposefully wandering around. You just set out a block of time and you purposefully wander around. You hang out where they are. You learn the names. You let natural relationships develop. You invite them over to your house. You build that relational base. And then out of that, you start building your ministry.
Yeah. There's a way in which global youth culture is becoming a lot more homogeneous. Young people, they're watching the same films, they're listening to the same music, they're playing the same sports, they're involved in similar activities, they're all into social media in a big way. And yet there are cultural differences as well across Europe, different groups. So how much does the cultural context of the youth you're working with shape the direction of that ministry? Are there differences between the way your ministry's developed in the dozen or so countries that you're working in?
The longer we've worked here, the more homogeneous the culture has become. And we've just now, in the last couple of years, even been able to do large youth rallies that are multinational. Okay. And we just did one with 650 young people in our town from 7 countries.
And is language not an issue there?
We work in English there.
Okay, and they all speak English?
And they can handle that, which now it's come to the point where they're doing a lot, they're watching their movies with subtitles and all of that. But that's just been recent. So I would say every year the youth culture becomes homogeneous. But what's interesting is that the culture that there are numerous subcultures in youth ministry in youth work, and it's not Czech, Polish, or something like that. It's skaters and video game players and punkers and it's actually subgroups within their youth world. It's more the culture of the particular subgroup that they're associating, which can be wildly different. The kinds of things they watch, the language they use, how they dress. So we have to become almost more a student of youth subcultures than of the national culture than sits behind that. And is just of even a secondary, tertiary importance.
So it's really quite tribal in many ways.
Very tribal.
So you're having then to contextualize what you're doing into each of those tribes, because I guess some of the youth tribes in a way don't mix that much with each other either.
They don't.
They might be quite separate from each other.
Yeah, they're youth really looking to find their identity. And am I am a rapper? Am I a punk? It's just all different. It's wildly different. So very interesting.
So you tend to work within those cultures rather than drag people out into.
If you break into one of the tribes, then you have a much easier time reaching it. Or someone from that tribe trusts Christ. But they kind of orient within those sub tribes. Or else you create one of your own, which is some of what we've done even with this music minister or sports. We create a tribe. We say, now you're part of Fusion, now you're part of Edge Sports, now you're here. And if the tribe's a good one, then that becomes their tribe, and then we have a lot of influence over them.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it's amazing looking back over 25 years and seeing what's developed from what were quite small beginnings, but a big vision, and what God has done through His Spirit across all these nations. And maybe some people watching this video will be just starting out. They're in a very small church. There might not be very many young people at all. And they're thinking, oh, I could never do that. This guy's on another planet, to the kind of thing that we can do. What would your advice be to young youth leaders just beginning small youth ministries in the local church? How would you direct them, advise them to prioritize and plan?
Yeah, well, I would say study the life of Christ. I've said that several times, but there's so much in there about you look at Galilee, you look at Nazareth, 150 people lived there. Capernaum with just, it's very small. Where Jesus started was very small, and within one generation it reached the world. And so what you have in the life of Christ and the ministry of Christ is actually the small and the big, and how it went from the small to the big. And so part of it is I would encourage them to pray big and to ask God for big things. When we began with our ministry, we went out with two couples, and I wrote out a 10-year vision that I was praying for at the bottom, and I said, how many people do we need to accomplish this? I said, I think we need 200 on our staff. And that was a time when we had four. And so I was asking God for that, but I knew that there was a long process to get there, and I had to be faithful with on the disciple-making trail, which had to be leading people to Christ, discipling them, training them as leaders, releasing them, and following God's movement in that way. So I would say, don't be afraid to dream big. Study the life of Christ, and then be disciplined about the disciple-making process, because you can't shortcut that. Yeah. And that's what really brings the multiplying fruit.
And as you say, we have this wonderful model in the first century from the greatest disciple-maker of all. I was in Israel last year, and we went to Nazareth, and there's only one synagogue there. Yeah. So you know it's the one where he opened the prophet Isaiah and preached.
That's right.
And what's astounding about it is how small it is. And there would only be 30 or so people would fit in there. Yeah. But that's where he decided to start his ministry. And then in Galilee, as you're saying, Capernaum, just wandering along the waterfront there and finding people in what was quite a small town in a backwater in the Roman Empire. But that's where it all began. So I guess that's the message, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't worry about starting small, because God can do amazing things through it all.
Well, and I've been doing youth ministry for 36 years now altogether, and during that time you just see so many trends. And what will happen is youth ministry will cycle, and people go, what's the latest greatest? Because the latest greatest, since we're working with young people, we need to be contemporary, and we do. We need to be in tune with youth culture, but we need to be more in tune with Jesus and how Jesus did ministry. He's always the best one to model after. And so that he will be relevant in every age, in every culture. And so that we're always asking the question, where are the young people are at today? What would Jesus do? You know, what did Jesus do? And what would he do if he was here now? So we're always trying to understand, what's our context? What did Jesus do? And what would he do? What can we picture him doing based on what we see from his life if he was in our context?
So you're actually having to adapt each year as the ministry grows
and
think, you know, how do we have to change it now?
Yeah, so you're changing all the time, but you're changing with a reference point of how do we now express what we see in the life of Christ in this
into this new context.
Into this new context, right?
So just thinking about the church generally, and maybe this will be our last question, but thinking about the church in Central and Eastern Europe at the moment, how do you and thinking back to the burden that you felt after the Berlin Wall came down, seeing the opportunities not being taken. How do you think that the church in this part of the world needs to change more to be more effective in mobilizing youth ministry? Are there still areas of change?
Yeah, I actually think in the next 10 years for the church to really accomplish what it needs to, there needs to be some significant paradigm shifts in the entire church. We're finding that whole young generation is, when we talk to the youth leaders and we talk to the young people, their greatest frustration is the ceilings they're coming up against in their church. And they're ceilings that are significant, that should be changed, that should be different. If they're not, there's going to be a lot of potential loss. You know, what happened was in our area of the world, when the revolution came, there was a seam and everything changed. But the changes that were made not long after the revolution haven't been revisited. So, you know, it's like we're at church 2.0. You know, if you had said 1.0 would be under communism, we're at 2.0. And that's been 27 years or something like that. Now that there's been incremental changes and adjustments, but the kind of things that are needed to radically release this generation are only being done in a few places. And I'd say there's a lot of places where there's quite a bit of resistance to that much change. It's going to have to happen. And so actually I think we've seen the breakthrough in youth ministry. Like I could tell you hundreds of examples of incredibly innovative youth ministry that's going on. And I don't think we've seen the breakthrough yet in the church in response to that. Yeah. And that's what I'm praying for now.
So we're seeing a glimpse of what can happen
right.
through your ministry, through others who are doing these things, but we could dream much bigger.
Yeah, and part of it is I think that generation needs to be released into planting new churches. And they need to be released much quicker, much sooner, with much more tolerance for a little bit of a messy process, but we're cheering our kids on, you know? They're gonna make it, instead of just trying to hold on to the past, which I think is really stifling some of the potential of this generation.
Yes, because they are the ones who are gonna take the baton
right.
into the next generation.
Yeah, that's right.
And we don't know if this is the last generation, but we certainly know that this is the last chance for this one.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's why it's so important. Dave, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Peter.
Your experience, your ideas, your encouragement.
Super.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.